Familie Aue.
Gustav Auer? Ja, das bin ich. So, so. Ein Telegramm.
Woher ist es denn? Aus Übersee?
Was für ein Onkel!
Geh, gib her. Ankomme 11 Uhr am Airport. Abholt mich bitte euer Onkel Boldi. Schau da, der Dicke mit den Bermuda-Shorts, der mit dem Aktenkoffer.
Und Handschellen.
Vielleicht der Alte da, mit dem weißen Kittel und dem Käppi.
Gustav Auer, ja, das bin ich. So, so. Eine Tasche.
Für uns?
Aus Übersee?
Ist sehr schwer.
Was war das?
Es kommt aus der Tasche.
Ein PC.
Hello, it bends. Ah, your Uncle Polly.
Was?
Du musst die attraktive Mikarla sein.
Huh? Ja.
Schau ihn dir an.
Ja, wie war der Flug?
Geh bitte.
Es war eine beschwerliche Reise.
Na.
Vielleicht hat er Hunger?
Hast du einen Appetit?
Hallo, ich bin's, euer Onkel Polly. Hallo, ich bin's, euer Onkel
Polly. Jetzt ist er stecken geblieben.
Hallo,
vielleicht, bisschen schütteln.
Komm, René. Und,
hast du dir wehgetan, Onkel Boldi?
Hoffentlich ist es nichts Ernstes. Ah, Herr Doktor. Wie steht's mit ihm?
Zum Glück.
Ja, natürlich werden wir ihn schonen.
Na?
Gut schaust du aus, Poldi.
Das wird schon wieder.
Das Sprechen soll auch bald wieder funktionieren.
Hat der Herr Doktor gesagt.
Hört einmal.
Er singt.
Die nächste Episode hören Sie heute in einer Woche. In der Zwischenzeit wartet die Familie Auer im Internet auf ihren Besuch.
http://www.thing.or.at/thing/auer/. Oder rufen Sie die Auer Hotline des Public Voice Labor 045 02 99 15 99.
Kunstradio, Radiokunst.
Guten Abend, beim Kunstradio begrüßt Sie Heidi Grundmann. In unserer Sendung hier auf Österreich 1 steht heute Radiokunst aus Großbritannien auf dem Programm. An- und abschließend gibt es eine Radiopredigt. If on a summer's night a listener, lautet der heute Abend ganz aktuell passende und Italo Calvino paraphrasierende Titel der Arbeit, in der die beiden jungen Briten Lance Dann und Rohan Krivacek das Thema Radio auf einigen Ebenen abhandeln. Dann und Krivacek kommen übrigens von der Live-Radio-Performance und die Arbeit, die Sie gleich hören werden, ist ihr erstes Stück vom Band. If on a summer's night a listener von Lance Dann und Rohan Krivacek.
Here I am, drifting, alone again. It's better that way. A lot of people have come into my life, they've talked a lot, saying I was good, bad, or one thing or another. They haven't really said much. And then I left. Hey ho. They had a funeral for me the other day. A few of them turned up. Did you know that funeral is an anagram of real fun? It's true. Check it if you don't believe me. That was all I could think as I watched over them. Oi! I was a clown! For pity's sake, there's no need to be so miserable! Lighten up down there! Tell a few jokes! Chuck some flans about! But I didn't. So that's why you're here with me now, so that I can at least have a proper send-off. A true fool's wake. In memoriam ad absurdum. I've pried into the minds of those who knew me at the circus and lifted their thoughts out of their heads. I bet you didn't know the dead could do that. Anyway, they're lying before me now, flapping and struggling to return to their owners, so I'm going to run through them before they escape and sort of tell you my life story, the way it really happened. Sounds like fun. Well, OK, it'll keep me entertained anyway. You can do what you like. You don't have to join me. Now, this is important, so listen. I haven't always been a clown. It was a crummy job in the long run, anyway. No, I was someone before I wore polka dot nylons. Someone I wanted to escape. Well, that doesn't matter now. It all really began when I met the gaffer. A bit of a strange man, a kind of patchwork of ill-fitting features, like a bargain bucket Frankenstein.
I met him many years ago. He was on a bicycle. Started talking and invited him into the wagon. Cup of tea. Said he was on holiday. We arranged the next time he had a holiday that he could come and stay with us. He said he was going to give up his job and come and join the family. He stayed with the family for ages and ages and ages.
So I ran away with the circus. I entered the world of custard pie, derring do, and sawdust in your socks.
always used to have a saying. If you're ever given a gift horse, the first thing you should do is walk right up to it, pat it on the nose, stick your thumbs into its gums and have a damn good look into its mouth. I was so carried away by the romance of it all that I didn't get round to looking into this nag's gob. Oh, well, live and learn, eh? Hey-ho. I befriended anyone who crossed my path, no matter whom, and carried out whatever work they pushed me into, no matter what.
Most of the time, he was, like, cleaning out the lion's cage and stuff like that. You know, and they do sort of a vast amount of dung on lions. And then in the evening, they paint him up, slap some makeup on him, and he had to go in and be funny. You know, he wasn't remotely funny. He just had to go in and do these sort of moronic things.
Thus speaks Lieutenant Mundow, the most apathetic clown the circus has ever seen. No one knew why he gave himself a military title. We just called him Mundy. He didn't seem to mind. I think he hated clowning. He definitely hated slapstick. If you ever caught him with a pie or a bucket of water, he'd look sort of resigned, as if he just realised that this was all his life amounted to. And he'd slouch off, bitter and defeated. He was my partner. Hey-ho. There was one clown there who I liked, who everyone liked, Quango, the oldest clown in the circus. Everybody wanted his company. He never knew who to please first. I learned a lot from him.
We used to laugh at him because he was a very clever little fella. You know, not only as a clown, but he used to do what they call us Jimmy on the mop. He was good on the rings, the horizontal bars. He was a good all-rounder, you know what I mean?
He reckoned I was about the best he'd ever seen at the Jimmy on the mop.
He made himself an household name because his hair used to stand up. He used to pull a thing and his hair used to stand right up. And he used to use the big, long boots. And, I mean, that was his gimmick. It wasn't what he did, it was how he did it. Just walk round the ring fence, you know, and up goes his hair like that, you see what I mean? And, of course, the people, they used to just cry laughing. The kiddies used to cry laughing.
He used to go around the audience and he would fix on somebody and he'd practically swoon as if he'd been suddenly struck with absolute adoration of this person. And he'd pick on the poshest, most formidable lady in the audience. And of course it was hilarious because she got very embarrassed about it and he was just, about her, just loving her, you know. And it was really nice. And he's a very famous clown, and I wish I could remember what his name was.
Oh, that it's come to this. Madame Isidore, in those days I was her favourite. A golden little clown who could do no wrong, and now she can't even remember my name.
Wonder what's happened to him. Would like to know.
How sad. Hey-ho. She was our fortune teller, shrouded in fake silks and made up like Dun Xiaoping's corpse. I used to love it when she read my palm. Not that I believed a word of what she told me, but she said such beautiful things that I didn't care. Sometimes she'd look sad when she gazed into her crystal ball, and then she'd sigh and tell me the same fairy stories she always told me. I used to try and see what she saw in there, but all I could make out was my own reflection, all bent and twisted like in a hall of mirrors. I wonder whether she really saw my fate in those moments, and would I be here if I'd known what was coming? She lived with a pack of hideous, braying little dogs, her son Samson, the gentle strong man, and her daughter, sweet Carmen, the trapeze artist. Oh, angelic and unattainable.
She used to go from the top, there'd be this long rope, And she would up this rope, you see. And she'd get up at the very top, absolutely the top. On this ring, she would hold, and she would do these big flips. She would do 100. And everybody got to counting. The whole audience would count.
There was one thing which my mother disliked, and that was people going right up, high up. You know how high the roofs were? She didn't like seeing that happening. She thought at any moment something was going to suddenly drop and have an accident, a serious accident.
Pretty little angel eyes.
We went everywhere together. We went everywhere, drinking, womanizing. When we were young, we were all tough guys, I'll tell you. And he was a real rough roarer.
Oh, those were the best of times. We used to hit the local towns hard, the gaffer leading the way, Mundy sulking along behind. Sometimes it seemed like we never left the ring. Everything was a joke and we were just clowning in our civvies. Like that time we went to a dance
to a dance in, remember the name is. But we went to a dance there, there was an Italian geezer there, a waiter from some restaurant. And my mother was there, my sisters.
See, I'd got an umbrella caught in me throat. Cocktail umbrella. And I'd started choking.
He went out to the toilet. And when he came back, this Italian merchant grabbed hold of his tie. And he was choking him with his tie for what? I don't know. I never did find out why.
I had a parasol wedged in me gob and he was trying to get me to cough it out.
My mother, she saw what was happening and he's trying to choke him, shaking him about.
For God's sake, it's called the Heimlich manoeuvre. He was saving my life. I'd be dead now if it wasn't for him. Well, I mean, I'd be dead then now.
My mother walked home and she hit this guy. Stark out. Oh, yeah, she hit him hard. Oh, mother. And one of my sisters, she could hit a man and knock him out. That's cold. Blood. Oh, yes. Oh, they're all tough geezers.
And stupid. She beats an innocent man into the ground and then I have to thank her for it. Imagine that. I've never been so humiliated, which, for a clown, is saying something. Hey-o. What's it matter? They meant well, and they treated me as one of their own.
I found this little bar where everyone played poker, and it was like a heavy scene with people from all different countries.
I used to spend long hours in there. I remember everyone in that building was drunk. It was a whole honeycomb of drunks. Sawdust on the floor, spittle hanging in the air. People had passed the window, and then Carmen walked in. It was the first time we were together, properly, away from the big top. She was supple and strange. She was liquid, moving fire. And it was a magical night. There was so much between us. I was just left glowing, feeling more wonderful than I'd felt for a long time.
It was a magical night. It was just the most beautiful time, and there was so much, I suppose, between us, and so much understanding and love and time. And the next day I left sort of glowing, feeling more wonderful than I'd felt for a long time.
I'm just trying to think back and see if I can get him back. There were two of them, but one I liked much more than I did the other.
He's a door. Surely you can't have forgotten so much.
And if my daughter would come back, I'll give you some names. So why is she staying out so long, shopping?
It seems you have. It's cruel. She's a mystic who sees the future and's blind to the past.
I had the feeling he sort of hated the audience in a funny kind of way. He was poking fun at, whereas the other clowns that I have met, they were poking fun with you, you see. They weren't just being nasty and critical, you know? They, not at all, in fact. But that one was. I didn't like him.
He thought he was brilliant. He thought he was special. And people should, you know, sort of, people would work with him and he wouldn't pay them and he wouldn't credit them. He took all the credit for himself and that's the way he ran his life.
As if he deserved one iota of credit. In the ring he cut a pathetic figure. Monday, the lethargic clown, the posters would proclaim. Gasp as he potters round the ring. Marvel as he sticks his hands into his pockets. For your entertainment only, he will look bored, tired and even yawn occasionally. I needed something more from a partner. I needed a clown who knew how to take a flan in the face. I decided to team up with a bright young clown, Gertie. He was sharp, wily, with far more life in him than old Mundy. I wasn't going to make any mistakes this time. I had to have him eating out of my hand. I decided to win him over. I knew it would take only a few carefully placed words and a little posturing.
They were our role models. They were definitely our role models to go on in later life. That's who we wanted to be like. They probably treated us less like kids than the others did, although they still treated us as kids. And it was really, really weird because we used to sit down and just suffer it. Actually being in their company and walk away going, oh yeah, I'm right proud of ourselves, although we just sat there being slagged off.
I had a great time with him. A really good time. I mean, while we were firing on all cylinders together, it was brilliant. But over the years, we found that we sort of drifted apart. And I thought, he's changing.
They worked together in the ring, outside the ring. They didn't know each other. Didn't want to know each other. It was only many, many years later that we found out that they hated the sight of each other. But that happens. When you're in the ring, you're in the ring.
I think Mundy began to realise how much I hated him. I used to whack a bit too hard when we were scrapping, and there were bruises under those striped sleeves, I can tell you. In a circus, we have a saying, never burn a clown. People really believe it. I've heard strong men mutter, there's nothing worse than a clown when he's mad. And lion tamers warn, they can turn vicious, them clowns, you know. Yeah, right. How much damage can a man with a custard-filled trousers and huge floppy shoes really do? Clowns are vulnerable. The way they look just asks for trouble, so they create this kind of mystique to protect themselves. The one person who isn't afraid of a clown is another clown. We all wear the same makeup and we know it don't hide a thing. Now, Mundy was one clown who was just asking to be ripped off. He was begging for it, so I burnt him bad. Pocketed every penny we ever earned. And there wasn't a thing he could do about it.
at the end of the day, I've been a mug standing there on stage for years and years. You know, I want to know where my money is. So when he turns around to me and says, oh, you know, I don't see that, you know, I don't see why you should be paid, I think to myself, well, because I was there and I'm owed the dodge. It makes me sad, not for them, not for him, not for me, but it just makes me sad for what we were as a team, because now that is, it doesn't speak with one voice. Now it doesn't mean so much, and I think it meant a lot.
It was an incredibly important relationship, just for both of us.
They told me that she was mad, untouchable and crazy.
One night, he was 5 minutes late to meet me. I was deeply saddened because that meant that our love was becoming a bit less.
I never understood her.
He pretended that it didn't matter, that went to bed.
She had a temper that was close to insanity.
At which point, I picked up a bottle and I, like, smashed it on a shelf. And, like, I smashed it 3 times, and the whole shelf, the whole wood just disintegrated. But the bottle didn't break, by which time he'd grabbed me.
She had a temper that some called insanity.
I then bit him, and I bit a whole mouthful of flesh out of his arm. And he dropped me and then tried to catch me again, and I bit something out of his mouth. Bit something out of his leg.
Well, they were just dull, frightened of her. Only I could really understand her.
But everyone used to always ask what that bite was in his arm. And he'd go, this wild animal bit me. And we'd laugh together.
He was terrified of dogs. We didn't know that.
Terrified, not terrified, hated them. Still do, always will. Listen, if a clown has a natural enemy, it's a dog. You see, to a dog, we clowns are the one type of humans they feel they can safely have a go at. To them, we appear foolish, clumsy, vulnerable, so they take any opportunity they can at chewing a lump out of us. Ask any clown, and as sure as a pound to a pinch of granny snuff, they'll have been chopped on by some mongrel or other. That's why we make such idiots of them when we're in the ring, dressing them up, making them do unnatural things. It's revenge, pure and simple. We used to give Madame Isidore's little lapdogs a hell of a time. Oh, we were always kicking them around, getting them drunk and stuff. One day, we poured air remover all over this little mutt. You should have seen the thing, sitting there all scrawny and hairless. I was crying with laughter as we chased it around a wagon, and then Gertie grabbed it, and this whole section, listen, this whole section of flesh slid away from its back leg, leaving all the muscle and bone exposed in perfect cross-section, like in an anatomical model. What got me, though, Gertie says he doesn't quite remember this, but I know what I saw. What got me was that instead of having proper bones in its leg, it had all these little vertebrae, like its spine had gone down into its leg. I just screamed, kicked it to the floor, and stepped on it over and over and over. From that day on, we didn't mess with Isidore's dogs. I just deal with them short and sharp. I'm trying to be subtle, of course, in case I was being watched.
She used to do a lot of... She used to breed an awful lot of little small dogs called Chihuahuas. And, of course, they're nice dogs to have, but they're very small and you can get under your feet awful quickly. And it's annoying. You just get under his feet always. And before you knew what he was trampling on, you suddenly used to hear this awful squelch. So I realised what he was. He was standing on a. He had suddenly trodden on a mouse or something like that. But it wasn't. It was one of the Chihuahuas. One of my mother's little dogs.
Well, thanks to Samson, I suppose, word began to get out and things began to get a little sour.
You could not be cruel to your animals because you'd have one hell of a time with everybody else. They'd all pile into you. You wouldn't last, in fact.
Look, I wasn't being cruel. There was something wrong with those little whelps. They were mutated, physically wrong. I was just trying to do everybody a favour.
You couldn't go against the whole circus, could you? Not if there was a big feeling, special feeling about something.
A lot of people only ever saw the bad side. They never really got close enough to him to actually see the good side in him. And I was close to see both the bad and the good side with him, you know? Either way.
Gertie, you stood by me when all the others were turning against me. You was a clown I could trust. A good man and a damn fine drinker. The pair of us were. Do you remember? We used to get wasted before we went in the ring and then scare the hell out of them all. It was just wild. We used to let go. We were a team, Dirty. We were the dog's bollocks.
He would go totally berserk and jump on stage and start headbutting the cymbals. And if you headbutt a cymbal, I mean, if you hit it from above and it swings, it makes quite a nice noise. It goes like this. But when it's sort of swaying and it's going like that, if you happen to try and headbutt it again and you catch it on sideways, you're headbutting against a layer, you know, of sheet metal. And it went sliced right into his forehead, and he was carted off down the local hospital, and we didn't see him again for about 5 days. And then he was back, you know, and then he started the old sort of, you know, taking a bit of this and a bit. It was, you never knew whether the bloke was going to, you know, survive the evening.
Sie hörten If on a Summer's Night, a Listener von Lance Dann und Rohan Kvivacek, eine Eigenproduktion der beiden jungen Briten. Heute in einer Woche gibt es ab 22.20 Uhr 40 Minuten Live-Szenen aus dem alltäglichen Irrsinn der Familie Auer. Sie können über die Hotline der Familie Auer und bei der Familie Auer im Internet schon jetzt an dieser Sendung mitwirken. Die Hotline beim Public Voice Labor hat die Nummer 045 02 99 1599. 045 02 99 1599. Die Familie Auer im Internet finden Sie unter http://www.sing.or.at/sing/auer/auer. Und heute in einer Woche können Sie auch noch während der Sendung mit der Familie Auer telefonieren. Und jetzt nehmen Sie sich bitte, bevor die Sendung Zeitton beginnt, noch ein paar Minuten Zeit für eine Radiopredigt von Bruno Piesek.
die Lebenden erkennen, dass sie sterben werden. Die Toten aber erkennen überhaupt nichts mehr.
No one has been known to return from the grave.
Alles, was deine Hand, solange du Kraft hast, zu tun vorfindet, das du. Durch Zufall sind wir geworden und danach werden wir sein, als wären wir nie gewesen. Der Atem in unserer Nase ist Rauch und das Denken ist ein Funke, der vom Schlag des Herzens entfacht wird. Verlöscht er, dann zerfällt der Leib zu Asche und der Geist verweht wie dünne Luft. Wer Asche hütet, den hat sein Herz verführt und betrogen.
Lass doch ab vom Menschen. In seiner Nase ist nur ein Lufthauch. Was bedeutet er schon?
Pour se divertir, on fait un repas et le vin réjouit la vie.
For all is vanity and a vexation of spirit.
Unser Name wird bald vergessen. Niemand denkt mehr an unsere Taten. Unser Leben geht vorüber wie die Spur einer Wolke und löst sich auf wie ein Nebel, der von den Strahlen der Sonne verscheucht und von ihrer Wärme zu Boden gedrückt wird. Unsere Zeit geht vorüber wie ein Schatten. Unser Ende wiederholt sich nicht. Es ist versiegelt und keiner kommt zurück.
What has happened will happen again. And what has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun.
Rien de nouveau sous le soleil.
Only that shall happen which has happened. Only that occur.
Was geschehen ist, wird wieder geschehen. Was man getan hat, wird man wieder sehen. Es gibt nichts Neues unter der Sonne.
La qualità di vita è una virtù.
Die Gier nach Leben ist eine
Tugend.
Il respiro che ci fa vivere è leggero come il fumo.
Il respiro che ci fa vivere è leggero come il fumo. Il pensiero è una scintilla sprigionata dal palpito del cuore.
Allora, godiamoci la vita. In questo mondo non c'è niente di meglio che mangiare, bere e stare allegri.
Nicht dem Schnellen gehört im Wettlauf der Sieg. Nicht dem Tapferen der Sieg im Kampf, auch nicht dem Gebildeten die Nahrung, auch nicht dem Klugen der Reichtum, auch nicht dem Könner der Beifall, sondern jeden treffen Zufall und Zeit.
For thou shalt eat the labor of thine hands, happy shalt thou be, and it shall be well with thee.
Wem kann der Gutes tun? Er wird seinem eigenen Glück nicht begegnen. Also iss freudig dein Brot und trink vergnügt deinen Wein. Trag jederzeit frische Kleider und nie fehle duftendes Öl auf deinem Haupt. Mit einer Frau, die du liebst, genießt es. Versag dir nicht das Glück des heutigen Tages. An der Lust, die dir zusteht, geh nicht vorbei. Denn es gibt für den Menschen kein Glück unter der Sonne, es sei denn, er isst.
Man schlemmt und wild und freut sich. Der Wein erfreut die Leben. Das Geld macht alles möglich. Das vollkommene Glück besteht darin, dass jemand isst und trinkt und das Glück kennenlernt durch seinen eigenen Besitz, für den er sich unter der Sonne anstrengt während der wenigen Tage seines Lebens.
Lui n'a pas fait l'amour et il ne prend pas plaisir à la perte vivante.
Whatever task lies to your hand, do it with might.